This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
I'm Philippe Cousteau from Earth Echo International, and you're listening to Out of the Blue, 855 AM, 3CR's Marine and Ocean News program.
Good morning and welcome to Out of the Blue on Sunday 26th of April 2026. You're listening to 3CR Community Radio, 855 on your AM dial, or you can have a listen from our website, www.3cr.org.au/radioblue, from where you can stream our broadcast, and you will also find a number of previously aired episodes that have been uploaded as podcasts. You can also check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/outoftheblueradio. We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land that 3CR is broadcasting from and pay our respects to their elders past and present, and also to future generations. My name's Andrew Christie from Melbourne Polytechnic and Marine Care Point Cook, and today's weather, what a beautiful day in Melbourne. Top of 25 degrees we're aiming for, with northerly winds 20 to 30 kilometres an hour, becoming light in the evening. So as always, please take care if you're getting into our beautiful bay or waterways in the state of Victoria, or indeed from wherever you may be listening. Now, today I'm joined in the studio by someone who is an amazing underwater photographer, amongst other things. Phil Watson, how are you today?
Very well, Andrew.
That's the way.
I've given up a day's diving to come talk to
you. Would you be able to get in there the Savo, you reckon?
Yeah, northerly wind looks good.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully you're not sacrificing too much with a bit of luck. So today we'll be discussing with Phil how Phil ended up doing what he does, have a chat about some of his favourite underwater haunts and some advice for taking great photos underwater. And we will be back after this brief announcement.
You might have heard about the Community Radio Plus app, but it's only when you start using it that you'll wonder how you lived without it.
You can listen to us wherever you are, at home, work, driving,
on public transport, gardening, protesting, or even in the bath.
Just search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
You're listening to Out of the Blue on 3CR Community Radio, 8:55 AM. So, Phil, for our listeners, can you give us a bit of an idea of who you are and your life story in a nutshell, if you will?
In a small nutshell, brought up in Melbourne, worked in IT my entire career, mainly in Australia and the US.
Right.
Still working in IT.
Yeah.
Nothing to do, IT security, so nothing to do with marine life, which is just a complete side hustle.
Yeah, so, right. Yeah, well, that's a big area, IT security. I'd imagine that keeps you pretty busy.
Yeah.
Very good. So, whereabouts in Melbourne, could I ask? Whereabouts in Melbourne were you from?
I was brought up in Carlton.
Oh, yeah.
And now live in Flemington.
Yeah, so, right.
Haven't gone very far.
Just around the corner. Very good. And what was it that sort of got you into your interest in marine life and diving and all those sort of things?
I think originally it was childhood holidays at Lawn and just sort of fossicking in the rock pools. Which are still there and still beautiful, you know, years later.
Yes. And
so that's how I got into snorkeling initially.
Right. And is it mainly sort of snorkeling that you do these days?
I'm about a 50-50 split between snorkel and scuba. So I really do love snorkeling. But scuba has its own, you know, fascination.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's like another world, isn't it, under there? I was wondering for a long time about getting into scuba and sort of did nothing about it. And then it was a trip to the Barrier Reef where I got underwater and that was my intro scuba dive. And it's just absolutely incredible. Yeah. I thought, yeah, this is great.
Well, that was mine too.
Yeah,
and just to be able to stay down was such a great thing.
Yeah, so. Yeah. It feels so alien, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Where you're breathing underwater, where your brain's telling you, hang on, you shouldn't be doing this. Mm. But it's, absolutely... absolutely incredible stuff.
And of course you're moving in three dimensions, so that's a bit more complicated.
That's,
too.
Yeah, very much so. That's it's a very very cool thing. How do you find, like, you mentioned snorkeling and scuba, how do you find snorkeling? I mean, it's let's face it, it's a much easier exercise to get ready for. You don't have to worry about whether your tanks are filled. You don't have to worry about lugging all the heavy gear down and all the rest of it and jumping in the water. Snorkeling's a fair bit easier. Do you find any advantages with snorkeling as opposed to scuba when you're trying to photograph wildlife?
So the big advantage with snorkeling is that you're not creating any bubbles. So you're much quieter.
Yep.
So so you're in much stealthier, as it were.
Yes.
But of course, it's harder to take photos from the surface because you might want to line up a shot and then you know, have to go back.
So
scuba is much easier for photography, even in very shallow bodies of water.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, it has a wonderful simplicity to it.
Yes. So. Yeah, absolutely. And for those that are considering getting into, let's say we've got a hypothetical, someone starting off in snorkeling, before they start getting into the scuba, which is a good way to go, get comfortable with the water. Where would you say, what are some of your favourite haunts around Port Phillip Bay that where people can get a good intro to snorkeling and things?
I would say any of the marine parks. So that's Ricketts Point, Jawbone, Point Cook.
Yep.
The main ones in the bay. So they're the best places because, of course, they have the most marine life.
Yes.
Because they are different marine parks.
Protected zones, yeah.
That's right.
Absolutely, absolutely. And of those, I've noticed you spend a lot of time in the water at Point Cook. What is it about, I mean, I love the joint. That's why I moved down there. That's why I live in Point Cook. But what was it that draws you back to Point Cook time and again?
Interesting ray populations at Point Cook.
Yeah.
You actually wrote a great paper about them.
So. Oh, thank you very much.
So that's, I'd advise anyone to read that paper.
Yeah, good one. Do you have any sort of favourites amongst the rays that you see out there?
The fiddle ray is a very attractive animal.
Yeah.
So no spine and intricate markings. They, of course, have the denticles just like a shark.
Yep.
So on the skin, so a very fine network of scales.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. I think with the fiddlers, they're so good because, like you said, they don't have the spines. They can't hurt you in any way, shape, or form. We can certainly hurt them, so we've got to be careful that we don't do that when we're
absolutely
out there.
Yeah, and never touch them. So
yeah.
The only ones I've ever touched are if they're caught on fish hooks, which often happens. They get caught on ghost fishing gear.
Yep.
And so we try and get the hooks out of the mouths.
Yep,
so,
absolutely. I actually had, for years and years, I'd been in the water snorkeling regularly for, how long it had been? Well over a decade, I reckon. And one thing I never used to carry was a dive knife. And then one day I went, it was down towards the southern end of Port Phillip Bay. I think it might have been sort of, absolutely blank now. Muscle Festival, Port Arlington. It was down at Port Arlington.
Yes.
And there was a small juvenile southern fiddler ray that was caught on, like you said, on ghost gear. It had the fish hook embedded in its mouth and the fishing line was wrapped around a pylon. So it saw me and it was trying to get away and it was tugging away and it couldn't go anywhere. I did not have a dive knife, so I yelled for someone up on the pier to send me down some scissors. Yeah. Luckily he did, this young fella, and I grabbed the scissors, did a duck dive and cut the, all I could do was really cut the line and off it went. And it still had the hook stuck, but you know, that's not ideal, but it's better than being tethered to this pylon where it couldn't fend for itself.
The best thing to do is to remove the hook if you can.
Yeah, absolutely. It would have caused a bit of damage. I hope that ray's all right, but anyway, it's something to look out for, that that ghost gear. It is a real problem in the marine sanctuary. And some of the other ones you mentioned, I've always rightly or wrongly considered Ricketts Point Marine Sanctuary to be one of the, probably the most picturesque marine sanctuary that we've got. It's absolutely gorgeous. Ricketts. What are your feelings around Ricketts Point?
So Ricketts Point has a marvellous substrate. It's got the shallow ledges system. So marine life loves the ledges.
Yep.
And it's also got very, very healthy seaweed cover of Eclonia.
Yes.
So the urchin barren problem that's in the upper bay has not hit Ricketts Point at all.
Oh,
so
right.
It's got a really lush kind of look to it.
Okay. Because haven't they been, I thought they were doing some culling. I think at one stage the Marine Care Ricketts Point group were getting a bit concerned that there were some barrens opening up.
I don't think it's been particularly significant, but it certainly is in the upper bay off, you know, Point Gellibrand, where the Nature Conservancy is the other big project.
Yes, they're getting very focused on that, aren't they? The Nature Conservancy around the area.
Right? Yeah, and they're having some good success with seed Eclonia, the native kelp.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Have you been noticing much Eclonia around Point Cook?
No, I almost never see it there.
Yeah.
But I never have.
It's almost been functionally extinct. I've noticed a few little stands coming up, and I'm assuming that's a consequence of the work they're doing in either the Southern Bay and or Williamstown, and the currents are dragging some of the phytospores around, and they're starting to get set. Whenever I see it, I photograph it these days just to try and get a mental note of where the stuff's at.
Because
a few little stands starting to come through, but nothing really significant.
They are trying to reseed in the crystals, which is the area just to the west of the Williamstown main beach.
Yes.
And another site to the east.
Yep. And I know the Jawbone Marine Sanctuary Care Group are trying to actually incorporate the crystals into the, trying to expand Jawbone Marine Sanctuary.
There is a proposal to increase the size of the park because they do need to be a certain minimum size to be really viable. And the Jawbone Sanctuary, I think, is the smallest of all our marine sanctuaries.
That's right. Around 30 hectares. It is fairly minuscule. Certainly by world standards, it's absolutely tiny. And I know Dr. Hugh Kirkman is a big advocate for increasing the sizes of the marine sanctuaries, the marine protected areas, just because they're, from an international point of view, from the IUCN, the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, by their definitions, they're really small. That'll be interesting to see how that goes. So the Jawbone Marine Sanctuary Care Group describes you as the go-to person for advice on all aspects of shore diving in Victoria, including suitable conditions and entry points. What are the sorts of things you look for in regards to, you know, a weather forecast and whether you actually go through and get in the water or not?
Okay, so with shore diving and with snorkeling, so this applies to both, there are three key variables. Okay. The first one is your wind.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is swell. And the third one is the tide.
Yep.
Okay. I know you're going to ask me about water quality. Maybe that's the fourth one, but let's put that aside
for
a
moment. Yep.
So the standard rule with the wind is it has to be an offshore wind because that is when that flattens the sea, whereas an onshore wind is very choppy. And so, for instance, if you're going off Williamstown, it faces south, so you want a northerly wind.
Yep.
If you're going the snorkel trail at Rye Pier, that faces north, so you want a southerly wind because it's the other end of the bay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. So, in other words, you haven't got waves dumping onto the shore. In the one that really, and of course, swell, I mean, if it's a howling southwesterly wind or something, it's going to be smashing waves onto the shore if there's big swells coming in.
I'm thinking of the ground swell, which is the swell you get outside the heads.
Oh, yes.
So this is at places like, if you're snorkeling places like Point Lonsdale, for instance.
Yep.
So the swell needs to be low. It needs to be a bad day for surfers.
Yeah. That's ideally what you're looking for. Surfers are unhappy.
Yeah, that's right. You want unhappy surfers, unfortunately.
Yeah.
The third thing is there are some sites in Victoria that are very tidal. The extreme example of this is the San Remo Pier at the entry to Phillip Island. The current rips through there.
Wow.
On ebb and flood. And you can get in for maybe half an hour on, but that's something where you need local knowledge.
Yeah, that's potentially a very dangerous sort of scenario.
Potentially dangerous. So I just raise it because it illustrates the point about tides.
Good one. Do you tend to look at the tides much when you're going to a spot in northern Port Phillip Bay, Ricketts, Point Cook, Jawbone?
It doesn't really affect the visibility much.
No.
It can be maybe slightly clearer on a flood tide because it's bringing the clean water in from the heads.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah. I've sometimes found the... look, on the flood tide, that means that you've got more water in that section of the bay. You've got more water to play with. You're potentially going to see a bit more. I've always found on a low tide, sometimes the fish seem to be very active. I've found around Point Cook where we get those nice little basalt boulders and you've got all the Galeolaria tube worms growing on them. Even in very shallow water, half a metre depth, 1 metre depth max, you see lots of the mullet and black brim and all that. Very active.
Yeah, that is very interesting observation, and it's absolutely true.
Yeah.
And you only need to be in half metres of water.
To see plenty of life. So, like you were saying before, that's ideal for a beginner. Really, really fantastic for a beginner.
Just be a little bit careful wading out at Point Cook. I have been stung by a baby stingray there.
Oh, really?
And it's pretty painful.
Oh, yeah, right. What was the scenario there? What happened?
I was wading out very carefully and it just kind of swam under my foot and stung me.
Wow. What did you end up doing? Get the hot water on?
Hot water. Yep. It was about half an hour of very intense pain. And then the funny thing is when the proteins on the barb break down, the pain just disappears like someone flicked a switch.
Unreal.
It's completely binary.
It's as good as they say it is.
Yeah.
Unreal. Good to know. All right, we might quickly kick to a song. This is a very appropriate song for today. This is What a Day by Faith No More from the album King for a Day, Fool for a Lifetime.
Freedom of Species is a show about animals, for animals, listened to by humans. Tune in Sundays, 1 p.m.
Born to be wild. Born to be wild.
You're listening to Out of the Blue on 3CR Community Radio, 8:55 AM, and Phil Watson is in the studio today. Phil, we just off air a moment ago, we were talking about, I wanted to get this plug in before we wind up the show, because we've got about another 8 or so minutes, and then we'll talk about a whole bunch of other things relating to your excellent photography work. But you actually have a winter talk coming up on freshwater diving. So that's at the Newport Community Hub, 13 Mason Street, Newport, for the Jawbone Marine Sanctuary Care Group. So how can people get involved in that one and check that one out?
So that's happening at 6:30 on Wednesday the 17th of June. And it's a talk about diving Victoria's lakes and the kind of life that lives in them, essentially.
Unreal. So, yeah. And I think people wanting to get tickets can jump on to the, it might be the Jawbone website.
The Jawbone website is free.
Yeah, excellent. But definitely register for catering purposes if you're keen to check that one out. I will certainly be in the audience. That sounds amazing. All right, talking about photography, Phil, what are your tips for people wanting to get into the photography side of things and capture some of the images from underwater?
So I think the best beginner camera is the TG7, which is the Olympus Tough.
Yes.
Which is, it's actually waterproof without a housing, down to 10 metres. Although you can put it in a housing and give it more kind of protection.
Yes.
If need be.
Yep.
It's got a microscope mode on it, which is for macro photography.
Uh-huh.
So these have just sort of swept the world in terms of cameras for snorkelers and divers.
Yeah, absolutely. I know from personal experience, I only picked one up a few months ago. I started having problems with my Canon S95 that had a housing, and I went to get some images at Jawbone, and I remember checking the seal and thinking, oh yeah, there's enough silicon on that, but there must have been a bit of crud there or something. Didn't put enough silicon on, come out and found a bit of residual water in the housing and thought, oh, and then I managed to get the camera, and my girlfriend Lexi said to me at the time, why don't you put it in rice? Take the camera and stick it in a bed of rice in a container.
Great tip.
It saved the day. So yeah. That camera's, it's not perfect. It's still got a few little glitches, but they're very, very manageable.
Rice desiccates the...
Acts as a desiccating agent, draws out all that moisture, and I think it managed to just save the electrics. So that was good. So, still fighting on, but have got the what is it now? OM Systems, isn't it? They used to be Olympus, but now they've gone under a slight
They sold it.
Yeah.
It was Olympus has sold it. And they're the only camera makers that make underwater camera accessories.
Yeah, right.
So they're the only ones that make their own brand housing.
Wow. Yep. Ah, that's excellent. Yes, I went the whole hog and got the camera plus the housing because I just thought, it's that
double protection. It's a great idea because the camera itself is waterproof. So if you have the little leak that you described.
Yeah, it's not going to hurt
anything. You don't destroy it.
That's it. Yep. You've got that protective factor. So that's a good one. Yeah, all right. Do you know off the top of your head, Phil, I know this is a real question around sort of how long's a piece of string, but how many photographs do you take in your average session when you go out there?
It just depends on the conditions. Like the key to underwater photography is how clear the water is.
Yes.
If you have a really clear day, you'll get great photos almost by accident.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's one of those really murky days, your photos are probably going to be terrible.
Yeah, absolutely. So if it's a murky day, you're more inclined to just enjoy the surroundings and not bother too much about the photos.
I just leave the camera in the car.
Yeah, really? Wow. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I know that's a funny one because I remember it's Murphy's Law. I've had a few occasions where I've actually gotten to the snorkeling destination. Most of the time, for whatever reason, it turned out to be Jawbone on the way home from work during daylight savings, and on two occasions I've actually forgotten my camera, and you know when you forget your camera something awesome's about to happen.
Absolutely.
And the first time that happened, it was a male stingray doing the rounds and trying desperately to mate with a female, and just kept harassing the hell out of it, and she kept moving away, and it was just going on and on for minutes at a time. That was amazing, and I didn't capture any of that. I would love to have gotten some video of that one. And the other time was before I even got in the water, I saw the the little adventure playground near Jawbone Marine Sanctuary.
Yes.
There were all these magpies going ape droppings over something, and it was a little tiger snake. And I thought it would have been great to get some footage of that too.
Yeah. So last year in Point Cook, we had Port Jackson sharks mating. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, grabbing on with the claspers. So.
Yeah. You got some images?
I did.
Excellent. So. I think I saw some of those. And can our listeners check out your some of the images that you take?
Sure. They're on Flickr. Perhaps in the show notes you can put the...
Yes,
the link
yes.
is a little obscure.
It is. It's a tricky one. So it's Flickr. So that's it's that HTTPS thing, you know, the colon and then the two forward slashes. If you go to flickr.com, F-L-I-C-K-R, flickr.com/, and then it's photos/ 3116719 at N06/. So that's tricky one. Yeah. I wonder if Flickr does it allow you if we put your name into Flickr or something, will it come up?
Yeah, you could just do a search.
Excellent. Hopefully get onto it that way, which is a bit less complex. So that'll I can tell from personal experience having a look at Phil's photographs. They're absolutely stunning. Do you have any particular modes that you're I notice you tend to use that fisheye sort of exposure a lot.
Yeah, so I use a Panasonic fisheye lens. It's the smallest production fisheye in the world for micro four thirds cameras.
Wow.
And the point about everything being small is that when you put it in a housing, it all becomes big and bulky.
Yes.
So you want to keep everything as compact as you can. So,
yeah, good one. So you've already spoken a bit about the rays. Is there any other, we've got a couple of minutes to go before we hand off to Sally for Out of the Pan, any particular marine life elements out there that are your real sort of go-tos, your real favourites to photograph?
So in the bay, we have all the beautiful benthic sharks, the sharks that live on the ocean floor mainly. So the Port Jackson sharks, the draft boards and the gummy sharks.
Yes.
None of these will take your arm off. But
no, that's it. Yeah, they're relatively
They're all completely
friendly.
Harmless.
Have you ever come across anything that potentially could? Have you ever seen any large sharks in the bay?
They tend to be very wary of scuba divers because I think we are quite loud to them. And, of course, they've got incredibly sensitive hearing and sensory organs.
They tend to keep very clear of us. Do you ever see the footage of that Daniel Urbach shot at luckily he had the GoPro on his head at the time, but the running that he had with the bronze whaler at Point Cook?
Yes, I have seen that. It's very unusual. He would have been snorkeling, I think.
He was, that's right.
Again, you're not producing those bubbles.
It's sort of hard to work out who got the bigger fright there.
There's been very occasional aggressive bronze whaler behaviour in the bay, but it's very, very occasional.
Very rare.
Extremely rare.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's it. And you also see some of the lovely smaller stuff, don't you? Nudibranchs and sea stars and all that sort of thing.
So the ocean is fractal.
Yeah.
There's life at every scale.
Yes.
Right from single-celled animals right up to, of course, your whale sharks.
So,
we have a great population of nudibranchs, sea slugs, down at Blairgowrie Pier especially.
Yeah.
Is a great place to see them.
Absolutely.
In a riot of colours and shapes.
Yeah. That's arguably the best shore dive in the state, isn't it, probably?
Arguably,
Blairgowrie.
Yes.
Yeah. Unreal. Now, what's fantastic, that brings us to the end of yet another episode of Out of the Blue. Stay tuned for Sally with Out of the Pan. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, and thanks again to Phil Watson for coming into the studio. Thanks very much, Phil.
Thank you, Andrew. So...
1.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio.